Welcome to the next installment of the Science Progress interview series. This is Andrew Pratt, and today I'm speaking with Barbara Bernhardt, who is a genetic counselor and a clinical associate professor of medicine at the University of Pennsylvania Health System. And today we are talking about genetic counseling and the promise of personalized genetic medicine. For those of us who might not be familiar with the field in general, can you tell us what genetic counseling is and what its goals are?
Genetic counseling involves providing individuals with information about genetics that may pertain to their health. We have a goal of educating people about the role of genes and disease, and also helping them use information to make decisions that relate to their own health or reproduction. So the goals are to provide education and to provide support and to provide referrals and information if that's needed.
Certainly. Well, based on the current genetic testing technologies that we have, what are the usual situations in which patients might seek genetic counseling in order to use their personal information to make healthcare decisions?
I still think that at this point in time, the usual reasons for having genetic testing are different according to whether we're talking about reproductive issues, pediatric issues, or adult issues. So in reproduction, people have genetic testing, first of all, to find out if they're at increased risk for having a child with a particular kind of genetic disorder. This might involve a couple being screened to find out if, for example, they're carriers for something like cystic fibrosis. There's also genetic testing that can be done on the developing fetus to find out if the fetus has a genetic disorder. In pediatrics, we use genetic testing when we suspect that there may be a problem in a child, either a newborn or a younger child. And this oftentimes is considered in children who may be born with birth defects, who may have developmental delays, or may have certain specific conditions that we believe are genetic, and we would be wanting to do a diagnostic genetic test to find out if that's in fact what they have. In adult settings, which is where I work now, we see people who may have a genetic disorder. Again, we may be doing a genetic test to diagnose a genetic condition, or we may be doing genetic testing to find out if somebody is susceptible to developing a genetic test. And I think these susceptibility tests are the kind of tests that are just taking off now and will continue to take off in the future.
What sort of susceptibilities might people be tested for?
Primarily at this point in time, most genetic testing for susceptibility is taking place in cancer, particularly with regard to susceptibility to breast and ovarian cancer and also to colon cancer and related cancers. There's going to be an increasing amount of testing being done, I think, to find out about susceptibilities to other common disorders of adulthood, things like cardiovascular disease, neurologic disorders, things like Alzheimer's disease and Parkinson's disease. So there's going to be a growing list of tests that we're going to be able to do to find out about susceptibilities to some of these common diseases.
Certainly. Well, various companies are beginning to offer direct to consumer genetic testing for individuals, and the price of these tests seems to be falling very quickly. And my question is this a good thing? Are you, as a genetic counselor, worried that patients might have their DNA sequence and misinterpreted, leading them to make problematic healthcare decisions?
Well, I don't think we really have enough experience to know what's going to happen, nor do we really, I don't think we have a whole lot of information on how commonly people are getting tested.
Mm-hmm.
The kind of testing that's being done now is to test people for small changes in their DNA that may indicate a slightly increased risk for some common disorders and actually some traits as well.
Mm-hmm.
So the way risk information is being given back to people is in terms of relative risk. So they're being told, for example, that you have a 1.5 times higher risk for developing heart disease, for developing hypertension, for developing Parkinson's, for developing restless leg syndrome, whatever, than the average person in the population. I'm not sure how meaningful those kinds of risks are to people, so I think it remains to be seen how people are going to interpret those risks and, more importantly, what they're going to do about them. I think it would be great if we all, for example, knew that we were at risk for heart disease, so we exercised more, reduced fat in the diet, didn't smoke, and took much better care of ourselves. But I don't know if people are going to be actually acting on the kinds of results that they get.
Mm-hmm. Are these tests going to be providing people with information that you think is particularly conclusive, or are we talking about indicators of, you know, small rises or decreases in susceptibility?
For the most part, they are not diagnostic tests.
Mm-hmm.
There are a few tests out there from at least one company where they're testing for changes in specific genes that we know cause disease. And those would actually be diagnostic tests. And there's one company that actually is offering diagnostic tests rather than susceptibility tests. They're diagnostic.
Okay. Well, that seems like an important distinction.
Mm-hmm.
Well, genetic discrimination has gotten a reasonable amount of exposure in the mainstream media recently, particularly in a series of stories that actually won Amy Harman of the New York Times a Pulitzer Prize this week on genetic testing and the ethical implications.
Mm-hmm.
How real is this threat that she writes about and that others have written about of discrimination by insurance companies or your employers? And, you know, is there this risk that people are going to refrain from sharing the results of genetic testing with their healthcare providers?
I think the fact of the matter is that the fear of genetic discrimination is high in the public. Actual examples of genetic discrimination are quite few. So we have this disconnect between what I think is reality and what I think is concern. So the theoretical concern, I think, is great. And in terms of genetic discrimination, it really depends in some part on what kind of marketplace or area you're thinking of. I think that there's a real possibility for genetic discrimination by companies that sell long-term care insurance or disability insurance. I think there's less of a concern in the health insurance marketplace, primarily because most people get insurance through large employers where there's no individual underwriting, and because many states have laws in place that prohibit discrimination in the health insurance market. However, I think that when you survey the public, most of their concerns are with regard to health insurance. They're concerned if they get a genetic test that shows that they're susceptible to something, let's say breast cancer, that they'll lose their insurance, they'll be charged a lot more for insurance, or something bad will happen. Examples of that sort of thing are very, very few and far between. Nonetheless, the fear is high.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. What about questions of access? Not everyone in the United States has health coverage, and not everyone in the United States can necessarily afford this kind of genetic testing. Is that going to create inequalities beyond the existing lack of coverage?
Oh, I think it certainly will. And actually, even when we're talking about the kinds of genetic tests that we order in our genetics clinic, which are genetic tests to diagnose genetic disorders, we sometimes are not able to get those kinds of tests even covered by people who do have health insurance.
Hmm.
So there's already access issues. These tests tend to be quite expensive. So it's become a problem getting even existing technologies made available to all of our citizens.
Interesting. Now, some of your past research has focused on the economic impact of genetic technologies for healthcare providers. Is this advent of personalized medicine and the impact of personal genetic testing going to have an impact on healthcare costs?
That's an unanswered question. certainly, there's got to be a concern that if people find out they're susceptible to something, they're going to request additional testing. On the other hand, there's the hope that if people find out they're susceptible to something, they may change their behavior so that they actually reduce their risk of ever developing an expensive disease. It's an open question that we really need some time to answer.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, we've covered a particularly wide range of topics. Is there anything in particular in your mind that you think people ought to understand about the public policy implications of genetic testing?
I think that one of the things people do need to understand is that this is an area that's still fraught with a lot of uncertainties, and I'm thinking it's the public's perception that as we begin to discover more and more genes that are associated with different disorders will have increased certainty about being able to predict someone's susceptibility to developing a disease and also to make recommendations for reducing their risk. I think that the public needs to be aware that we're not always able to do that, so we need to all tread quite cautiously as we approach issues relating to new genetic technologies. My hope is that as we learn more, we'll be able to make better recommendations. We'll be able to improve the health of the population, and we'll be able to have some cost savings. But the reality is that we're a long, long ways from being able to do that.